action. Bo.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Spacer, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah. That's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Choice Soy of Wine.
Lavinia.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Toughwich Wines.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Bebach Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Hey, thank you, Buzz. Keep on. They are happy because the Karen, our hurricane out in the Gulf, is going to go north of us and not hit us here in Tampa. Yes.
Oh, well, that's sad. Oh, I mean, no, that's great. Just
that's great.
Looking for some kind of thing. I don't know. So I didn't hear that. Okay.
Yeah, it's moving. Yeah. It's moving north. North and a little bit west or east, but it's going to be far enough out, and they were predicting rains coming here this weekend during our big event, which you'll talk about later. But
yes.
We have a big pet fest this weekend, but
yep.
We thought we were going to, they were saying like 70% rain back on Monday, and then they dropped it to 60-50-40. Just saw in the news this evening they're talking only 20% this Saturday. Yay.
Wow.
Oh.
Wow, it's very cool.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they must have known you had a,
we're excited.
Yeah, they knew you had a special event coming up, and it's like, you know what? We'll delay our plans until next week sometime. So there you go.
Yeah. There you go.
For bad weather. So this weekend it's going to be great, and we'll give you information on the big event on Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah.
And we say big event because it's a big event, not because. You can't say Super Bowl. You got to say the big game. This is the big event, but it is the Pet Fest, and we can talk about it. So,
yes,
and we can't
it's a super event. The
it's
super event.
Yes.
Super non-bowl event.
Super non-bowl.
Yes. We do have a special guest tonight, and I don't know if you want to do an intro, but we are going back to Missouri, and I just posted that on Twitter, and, of course, it's elsewhere, but in the show description. So we do have a special guest tonight.
Mm-hmm. You said during the opening there that sometimes we get off track. Well, we are going to be getting off track the rest of October here. We've got Joyce Joy of Wine coming on with us on the 24th. She's a blogger, and she does blogs about wine, and she's visiting haunted wineries and writing about them and all that. She'll be back on with us 24th, a week before Halloween. The 10th, and the 17th. I'm looking at trying to get a winery, a local winery, in on the 17th. It is haunted. And then next week, hopefully, there's some people who have written a couple of books about haunted wineries, and I'm going to try to get them on next week. So October is going to be our haunted winery and ghost episodes here, Ghost Month. So tune in. You may have the hair on the back of your neck rise.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
So let me write down local. I'm writing this stuff down. Okay, when I shouldn't. Here we go. I will. What time is it? Six something after? Five after? Okay. I can. I'll go out and get our special guest, and we'll be right back, and we'll be talking with Ladoga. Is it Ladoga?
Ladoga. Ladoga. I think it's Ladoga.
Ladoga Ridge. Hopefully it is. Yeah, we'll find out. Want to get him on the air.
Get him on. Have him pronounce it for us, yeah. So while Mike is jumping out getting our guest, I'll tell you a little bit about him. Ladoga Ridge Winery, Galen Haddock, is our guest from Ladoga Ridge Winery. Ladoga Ridge Winery is located in Missouri. Actually, Smithville, Missouri. Let me quickly. Smithville, Missouri is north of Kansas City, Missouri. I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri. My sisters both still live there. And this is how I got a hold of Galen, because my sister attended an event that he had at the winery. It was a breast cancer awareness and fundraiser. And she went to the event, got a chance to meet Galen, and told him about the program, contacted me and said, call him. He would be more than happy to come on the show and talk to you. And so I did, and he did, and he is, and we're getting him on tonight. He's it's only been in business for a couple of years. Excuse me again. I've got a scratchy throat. Did some mowing at the winery, and the dust was nasty, and it's stuck in my throat. But Ladoga Ridge has only been in business for a couple of years, and so they're celebrating their second anniversary, their second birthday right around now. And so that's why I got a hold of them to get them on here so they can tell us about Ladoga Ridge, tell us about our Ladoga. I guess I'm pronouncing it right. I'm not sure. We'll find out how you got the name. We'll find out all about the winery and everything. And we'll be sure that he tells us. Smithville, Missouri, though, I was going to tell you, Smithville, north of Kansas City. Smithville has a big lake there. The lake is Smithville Lake, big recreation area for the area. Before they built Smithville Lake, a little small river. I guess the river was no bigger than people's driveways, if that large. It was a very small river that went through, came down. And this river used to flood. It used to flood a lot. And it would flood Smithville and all the low-lying areas around there and the farmlands and all. And so they built a dam and created Smithville Lake. It filled up a lot faster than they expected it to, but big recreation area and all that. And so it's been a couple years since I've been up to that area there, so I'm not really sure where Ladoga is located, but I'm sure Galen will tell us all that information. And he is in the green room right now. We'll get him onto the show. And hello, Galen. Welcome to All About Wine.
Hi, Ron.
Glad you can join us tonight.
It's my honor.
Thank you.
Tell him about the little joke you played on me when I called.
Well, I figured that if you call me just before you go on air, and you are relying on a guest to be on your show for a while, I answered as another entity, and he goes, "What?" Mike says, "What?"
Well, as I told him, I dialed the number. I mean, I put the number in and it was wrong, so I backed over it and changed the number to the right one and went ahead and dialed it. And then when he answers it, it's some car wash thing, I go, huh?
Well, you know, if you live in Missouri, you got to have a sense of humor because the weather changes up here so much. And anyway.
That was good.
Anyway,
okay.
Good.
There you
keep
go.
Mike on his toes. That's good.
Oh, yeah.
I like to see that.
Ron, I want to tell you, I'm impressed with your knowledge of Smithville and the lake and all. It did flood here quite a bit in the 60s, and the town was under about 8 feet of water with a huge rainfall back then. I don't know exactly how many, but the Little Platte River does run through town, but and you're right, it is no bigger than your driveway, but there is a confluence of about three creeks that come together all right there before Smithville. So it's not just the Little Platte River. There's several, Wilkerson Creek and several other larger creeks that all come together, and when you get really heavy downpours in this area, all of those creeks swell into the Little Platte River, which also drains a large area, and it creates a flooding predicament. And this has gone on since
time immemorial.
Yes, and Smith that settled the town in the early 1800s put a grist mill there, and it flooded his place out and washed it out. The Corps of Engineers came in the early 70s and built a dam and controlled the flooding. And in 93, when we had a very bad flood in this area, this whole place would have been completely underwater, but the town had no effects whatsoever. So that is one example of our government doing something right.
Doing something right. Well, the reason I know about Smithville, I was born and raised in North Kansas City, Missouri, and the Smithville Christian Church there, our church used to go up there and help the youth clean up after the floods, which was almost an annual thing. I mean, it was just it seemed like every year they would have floods, and we used to go up there and clean up after the floods go through, and would help the church and church members and everybody clean out. Smell, oh my gosh, if you've never cleaned up after a flood, the smell is atrocious. I mean, it's just the mud, the fish, the smell, it's really bad. And that's how I know about the Smithville Lake and the floods and all that, because I actually did
help. That's all changed now. That doesn't happen anymore.
Good. I'm glad you. And that's what we said on the opening. Sometimes we don't really stay on the subject of wine. And that's a good example right there.
That's enough said.
So.
Well, I'm very honored that you have picked us out to interview us over all of the wineries in the country and all the people that operate in wineries throughout all the states. We're very honored for you to pick us out to spend the evening with me for an hour to talk about wine.
Well, thank you very much for being on the program. It's always a pleasure. We have to give credit to my sister, like I was explaining before we got you on. She was the one that met you up there and told me you would be a great interview. So I have to give her credit for contacting
us. Nice lady. Enjoyed talking with her.
Yeah, she's always on the hunt for wineries for me. I have to appreciate that. And if anyone else out there, and I always tell this, if anyone out there knows a winery that you think might be willing to come on the program, let us know. We'll be happy to contact them. So, but
great.
Enough for that. Galen, Ladoga or Ladoga? What is it?
Ladoga.
Ladoga. And why Ladoga Ridge? Where did the name come from?
Well, I'll tell you a little short story. We had first started out with, we noticed that a lot of wineries had the name of either the local area, the name would come from some entity that was closely associated with the area, and you needed a good story behind a name.
Right.
You don't want to name a winery necessarily after yourself, simply because if you sell it, the new entity necessarily doesn't carry on the name unless you buy Gallo and then you keep it Gallo. But I don't think I wanted to name it after me, because if I produced bad wine, I didn't want everybody calling me up at night complaining about the wine. So we chose the name of our street, or the name it used to be, as Rocky Point Road. And so we were going to call it Rocky Point Winery. And it had a history, local history around here. And I was over to, I had, before we got involved in a lot of this winery business, I had owned a couple other businesses prior to this, and I didn't know a lot about wineries and didn't know a lot about the wine business. I drank it, but I didn't know a lot about the industry itself. And I was over to, I had done, in my 18 months of research prior to deciding to do a winery, I did a lot of traveling and going to different wineries and asking people that would talk to me. Some people think it was a big secret. They didn't. They want to hold their cards close to their chest, and
well,
they don't want to let.
That's odd, because most people I call are more than happy to talk about the wineries.
Yes, that's correct. They do. But there are some that don't want to talk.
Yeah.
And I'm a pretty open person, and I, you know, someone comes up even out of the blue, whether they have ulterior motives or not, you know, they ask me questions, I'll answer them.
Yeah.
If there's something they ask me too personal, I won't answer it, and I'll give them a reason why. But you know, I traveled around in Iowa, Missouri, Kansas, and visited almost as many wineries as I possibly could when we were developing our winery to try to get a good handle on what we wanted to do here. And in the process, we were at a winery, and William mentioned to me, he said, what are you going to call it? And I said, Rocky Point Winery. And he says, you know, that's kind of a common name. He said, have you done any trademark searches on it? And I said, what? And he said, well, I think you better look into that, because that's a pretty common name and you may be infringing on somebody. And I said, okay. And, you know, we made a lot of mistakes through this journey that we've done with my wife, Leenda. And sure enough, we did a on the internet search of Rocky Point, and there had been somebody that had just filed for a trademark on that name 6 days prior to me doing that search.
Wow.
And we had already made logo, we had done business cards, but we really hadn't opened up anything yet. And so I contacted an attorney, and I said, it actually was Rocky Point Cellars, and we were going to be Rocky Point Winery. And I said, you know, that's not the same. And the attorney advised me that the name was so associated closely in that industry that he said, you know, if it was Rocky Point Bicycle Company, go for it. But he said, since you're in, you know, Rocky Point Cellars and Rocky Point Winery, he says, I think that in this point in early in the game, he said, I really think that you should just change your name altogether. So in my research in the beginning, what do you do when you're starting out a winery on your place? You do soil tests.
Yeah.
To find out if you can even grow grapes, you know, if your
right.
soil's even, you know, and that's what we did. And in that process, I found out that my topsoil was very unique. The name of the topsoil is Ladoga. And
yeah.
it is sparsely spread out through the top of the ridges in northwest Missouri and southern Iowa. And it has unique characteristics and minerals in it. Most of it has been eroded away over the eons of time. And what's left is really just very sparse. We did a search on it. We found out that it's one of the largest freshwater lakes in Russia. And there's two really, really, really small towns in the United States named Ladoga. And I forget what states they're in. Other than that, it was wide open. So we had no trouble. After a year of waiting on the government to give us the okay that we had the trademark, and now we have the registered trademark on it, Ladoga name, we own that name.
Uh-huh. So that's how Ladoga came about. I never heard of Ladoga soil. Like I said, I was born and raised there, and all I've heard of is clay, Missouri clay, and that's about it.
Yeah, it's there's Sharpsburg. There's all kinds of different, when you get into the different types of soil and you go to the universities and colleges, and they critique the minerals that are in your soil, and they do research and all that. You hear all these different unique names of about soil, but you never hear about Ladoga soil.
No.
Because it's so rare.
Hmm. Wow. That's interesting. What is Ladoga soil, the consistency? Does it help you grow grapes?
It is, yes, it's good for that. I'm not saying it's the best, but it is heavy in organic matter, which is good for grapes.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to fertilize as much. I believe it gives a unique taste to the wine.
Uh-huh. Good. Well, while you mentioned wine, let's talk about your wine. What do you grow? How many acres do you have? What do you grow?
We have 18 acres here, and we grow about 6 acres, roughly around 5-plus acres of Chamberson, Vignol, St. Vincent, and Norton, and Cayuga White.
Mm-hmm. So good variety, and you make wine from all those?
Yes. We've made wine from Vignol and Chamberson. The Cayuga White we have not actually made wine from yet. It's still in development, and we're hoping that next year we will make wine from that.
Uh-huh. No Norton?
Norton, we have a Norton wine. It's the state grape,
right.
And it makes a wonderful dry wine. They even have special contests, wine competitions for the best Norton in Missouri.
Oh. Well, I didn't know that. Or since, kind of depends on where where you're from. Tell us about each of your wines then.
Sure.
You know, go down through your list and talk. Tell us about each of them.
Well, we're pretty much primarily known for our fruit wines. We started out making fruit wines that we felt like would be appealing to people that were not necessarily knowledgeable in wines, that the Chardonnays, Merlots, Pinot Noir, all those. So we're in the Midwest, and we grow a lot, apples, peaches, blackberries, it's just the kind of thing that we have around here. So people relate to those kind of things. And we decided that that the fruit wines would be something that we thought would maybe appeal to the local clientele, and we were right. Our most popular wine is our strawberry rhubarb, which is
mm-hmm.
a very unique wine. And we didn't know how well it would go over, but people really like it. It starts out with a sweet strawberry flavor and then ends up with a tart rhubarb. So you're actually getting two wines tastes in one. And most people like it. A lot of people do. Some people, it depends on their palate, but, some people, when you mention strawberry rhubarb, they'll go, I don't know if I like that. And
nobody
they always
knows
end up,
rhubarb.
Yeah, well, everybody's grandmother made rhubarb pie.
Yeah, yeah.
Strawberry rhubarb
people
pie.
People now don't know rhubarb,
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you, the rhubarb, strawberry rhubarb, we have a hard time staying up with it. I have to constantly be making it because we just fly through it. It's
really? Wow.
Very good seller for us. We do not wholesale right now. because we are only 2 years old, and we're in the growing expansion phase. A wine consultant mentioned to me, he says, you have no, he says, this winery is too small. He says, this room is too small. You're going to have to have another barn to store your wine and do this and that. And I said, oh, you're crazy. This is plenty of room. Well, he was right. I mean, it's just hard. I mean, so in just 2 years, we've just last month bought a new bottling line.
Wow.
We built a new barn next to the winery. We are Monday insulating it, putting air conditioning in it, heating to store wine so that eventually we will be able to wholesale out to the grocery stores and whatever. But our business plan was to develop our brand name first.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, once they open the doors, they want to get their product out in the stores as quickly as possible. And you got to go in there and you got to do tastings. You got to do this and that and get people to accept your wine, put them on the shelves. And that's really a hard part of the business, is getting your wine out in front of the public.
Oh, yes.
It really is. They're skeptical because there's so many wines out there. And you have a lot of California wines and European wines that are also on those shelves too. And they want the best of the best, and they also want a wine that moves for them. It's all about money. You know, these, and you can't blame them. That real estate on those shelves are expensive, and they want bottles that are going to move and they can make their money and pay the bills. That's what it's all about. And I'm the kind of person that I'm not a good salesperson. I can't go out and sell something. I couldn't sell a snowball to the devil. So our business plan was to develop our wines in-house, and if they are good enough wines, they'll come. People will talk about it. People will tell their friends. It's a slow track to do it that way, and it takes time. But once you've done that, when you do decide to go out, there's none of that hassle of marketing your wine. They want the wine because they know the wine is good.
Yes.
And that's the path that we've decided to go. And we've actually, it's almost to the point where we're making people mad because we're not selling out their wholesale. They want our wines. We turn down people weekly simply because it's not as, when you're on this side of the fence with a business and you're developing it, people don't realize how much of a problem it is to gear up to produce wine on a wholesale level. My idea is that when you produce on a wholesale level, you need to have your product readily available, and you need a lot of product. The worst thing you can do is start selling out there, and when they sell out and they call you and say, I need this much wine, if you don't have it, that's not good. Well, no. Quite frankly, we're selling our wine through our tasting room and our winery, and we're doing quite well. And so, you know, to go to that next step, we need that extra space to store our wine in a controlled temperature area. And you got to remember, we just opened 2 years ago. And we're a small winery, and we're going through growing pains. So the first step was we've purchased a bottling line. We were doing everything by hand. And it's very labor intensive. It's you know, and if you, unless you've gone through that, a lot of these other wineries out there know exactly what I'm talking about. And now we don't have a lot of money where we can hire, you know, 5 to 10 employees and a big, you know, building and put $1 million or $2 million in the deal and ramp up and go nationwide. We're a boutique winery, And we feel that the quality is the very most important thing. And we found that that's the good way to go.
And it is. And most wineries in this country are small boutique wineries that really approach it a lot the same way you're doing it. I mean, you establish your brand and you get people to know it, and then it takes care of itself. It's as long as you have something that people enjoy. Question, Melissa, Bryant, and Brittany, your helpers and your family?
Yes. They're my children.
Oh, are they? Okay. And part of the crew now.
Yeah. We actually, got up at 12:30 in the morning yesterday, and I drove about 5 hours to the other side of the state, St. Louis side, and picked up 3 ton of Chamberson. They picked it at 6 o'clock in the morning, heavy fog. Put it in the harvest bins, or tea bins, whatever you want to call them, and strapped them down, and I headed back. Got back around 1:30 this in the afternoon yesterday, and we crushed and destemmed until 8 that evening. Bryant was up there raking the grapes right in the destemmer crusher, and I just got through pitching the yeast about an hour ago into that tank.
Wow.
And it's now on its way to about 800 gallons in that tank right now. And that's, for us, that's a big tank. You know, 800 gallons.
Yeah,
a lot
800
of wine for
gallons
us.
Is a big tank, yeah. So,
I mean,
you mentioned.
I mean, I've been to wineries that have 3, 4, 5, 10,000 gallon tanks.
Yeah.
But, you know, we're a small winery.
Yeah, and, you know, 800 is pretty good. Good size gallon tank, really, for what you're doing. Which, lots of questions here. I'm just as you were talking.
Shoot,
number one.
I'm ready for them. Go ahead. Ask me anything you want.
Where do you get your grapes? Besides growing,
well,
like you just said, you travel across the state.
Last year we had Chamberson and Vignola off our own vineyard, and you may not know because you're in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, just north. Yeah.
Okay. We experienced a 60-year drought last year.
Wow.
Which was devastating to my vineyard. I was focused. It's my fault. I was focused more on developing the business. I thought I'd done everything perfect in the vineyard. We had a very good-looking vineyard. The first 3 years that we had the vineyard going, we had heavy rains, very above average rainfall here. And most of the people I talked to that had vineyards, I asked them about irrigation, and they said, well, you know, yeah, I got it, but I don't use it about probably once every 9 years. I said, okay. So I just pretty much put it in my back of my mind that I really didn't need it. Being that we have adequate rainfall, 42 inches a year, I figured, you know, I'm going to have a very good-looking vineyard. I'm not going to have to worry about it. Well, old Mother Nature came along last year and slapped me down and made me realize that she was in control and threw a 60-year drought on me. And we tried to water, but it really was not enough for the young vines that we had. We got a harvest off of the Vignole and the Chamberson, but the damage was done. They were stressed too much. And we lost about half the vineyard of the Chamberson. So we were going to be short this year. That's why I bought outside of my vineyard, but within Missouri, using Missouri grapes, which is what you do here. And right. the Vignole produced an extremely concentrated grape, made a great wine. We have already sold out of it.
Oh, wow.
We produced about 300 gallons of that, and it was gone about 4 months after we made it. It was a very good wine. We've also purchased from, I have two growers close to me that produce vignoble for me, and we bought the grapes from their vineyard, and that's what we're making our vignoble out of this year. And I watch them very closely. I go and inspect their crop about three times through the year to make sure that everything looks good. And we're very happy with what we've got. What I realized what happened to me last year, I've since then put water lines in the vineyard, about 12,000 feet of irrigation tubing with drip irrigation, pressure compensating. I've learned a lot about irrigation since then. I had the whole winter to think about it, and I'm not going to be caught like that again. It was my fault. I took a gamble and lost, but my goal is to have a very beautiful vineyard. The vignoble bounced back and was very resilient. But the Chamberson was not quite as resilient. It took a harder hit. But we'll be back where we need to be.
Your fruit wine, your fruits, you've got strawberry and you've got, rhubarb, blackberries,
strawberry rhubarb.
Peach.
The strawberry rhubarb is a, what we do with that is I do something a little different than what most people do, most winemakers do. I ferment the rhubarb is in a class of its own. They really don't know when I put it in wine competition. They really don't have a class for it because it's not a fruit wine. It's a vegetable wine.
Yeah, rhubarb
I ferment the rhubarb, and then I use 100% strawberry as natural flavoring with no sugar added. And it's an expensive wine to make. We don't make very much money off of it because of the cost involved in it. Because who's going to drink a strawberry rhubarb wine that costs $18 a bottle? Not many.
Nobody.
So we don't make a lot of money off of it. It moves well, and it's we've had a lot of good feedback from it, and it's our flagship wine. Our blackberry, same thing. I buy fresh fruit and the blackberry juice from Washington. There's a lot of entities out there where you can buy blackberry juice from just about anywhere, pretty cheap. But when you go to research it and find out that it's not from this country, it comes in from overseas. I'm not going to mention where, but I don't go there. I buy it from Washington State. It's consistently a very fine fruit juice. There's different ways to make the blackberry. Some wineries use a grape, nondescript grape as the base, and then use blackberry flavoring and make a blackberry wine. I don't do that. I make blackberry wine from blackberry juice. I believe the other way is fine, but I don't think you get the flavors or the true taste. When you drink my wine, it's like eating a blackberry right off the vine.
Sounds interesting. Your peach, is that Missouri peaches?
Yes, and it's also won the best of show in the Missouri competition this year.
Wow, well, congratulations.
Thank you. It's kind of one of those little quiet wines out there that you don't hear much about, but it just came out and surprised us.
Yeah, it sounds good, really. The Choco Cherry Kiss. How'd that come about, and what's that taste like?
Well, my wife, you know, I'm back in the winery all day long. I don't have the marketing skills that she does. She come back here and says, I want something for Valentine's Day. I said, oh, really? And I said, what is it you want? She goes, well, I want something sweet and that people like. I said, well, cherry wine. I said, we got a blackberry wine. We got a peach wine. We got a strawberry wine with rhubarb. I said, what about cherry? She goes, cherry's good. With chocolate on it? I said, do you want to put chocolate on the bottle? Dip the bottle in chocolate or what? I mean, and they chipped off a piece of chocolate and eat the cherry and drink the cherry wine? She goes, no, I want it all one. She goes, no, I don't want to do that. I said, all right, let me think about it. So I got to thinking about how I was going to get chocolate into the cherry wine. And I thought, well, how do they do that with coffee?
They have coffee
beans. So what about cocoa beans? So I experimented, and I like to experiment with stuff. And, you know, some of the stuff you have to spit out because it's bad.
Yeah.
But some of the stuff is not bad. And I ended up with a pretty good product, and it's a cherry wine with chocolate in it, but the cherry is the wine. So I didn't want the chocolate to overpower the cherry, because the cherry is the wine. And the ones that I've tasted out there, the chocolate is so overpowering and so strong that, you know, it's like, but I'm kind of particular. But we have a very subtle chocolate taste to our cherry wine, and it too sells very well. We actually sell out of it at all the festivals.
Yeah, good. Good. Speaking of festivals, I noticed on your website that you have quite a few events and stuff that you are involved in and do. Particularly the one that caught my eye, I think, was the event that you do every year. And that's the one that you just had a couple of weeks ago too, I believe.
Yes. It was
that. Go.
Well, the Because event is B standing for breast cancer cause, the breast cancer cause. We donate part of the proceeds from that wine to breast cancer research. We had a teacher here that was very well liked, and she died of breast cancer, and Leanda wanted to try to celebrate her life with this breast cancer wine, and it's a blush wine, Catawba blush wine, and as you know, this month, October, breast cancer. We had the event here to raise money, and we did pretty good for a little boutique winery. We raised over $1,000.
Wow.
And we donated a third of that, of each one of those three of the local charities. And we had people that came out for that event. We had music. We released balloons at sunset, and on our website you can see some of those pictures. I don't know about our website, but our Facebook site has some nice pictures of the balloons being released. And you'd be surprised how many survivors of breast cancer or people that are going through it right now came to the event. And it's just been we do more and more like I say, we've only been open 2 years. The first year was just kind of a thing that we heard and put together. But this year was a little bit more organized. The food was a little bit better. We try to do a lot of it ourselves because, quite frankly, we just don't have the big budget to hire people to do it for us. And, I mean, really, I mean, we're not a big entity here. We're growing, and, you know, and big is not always better. We feel like being the Midwest small, people like the surroundings that we have here, and they like coming here. It's a really relaxed area, and it just seems to work. And they really like the charity event, and it's gone well. We hope that it grows each year. And it's a disease that has affected my wife's family, and yeah, that's kind of the link there. I mean, and that's the story behind that.
Sounds like a great event. We at Florida State Winery, we just had a breast cancer fundraiser about a month ago, I guess it's been, and
very good.
They raised $1,000 on that event too, which
that's
we
good.
Were thrilled for helping out on that. It's a great group of people that put it on and all that. So it's a good cause. We do what we can.
Yeah, it
that.
Is. I mean, hopefully they'll lick the disease and be able to conquer this terrible disease that is. I mean, men get it too. You
yes,
don't hear about it, but it's something that once it started, it just won't let you go. I mean, it's. I mean, some women survive it. There's some lady in what movies? I forget. She's married to some. She has a very well-known profile. That she had a double mastectomy, just because she had the gene that was 90% probable of her having it. So she was very proactive and that was an extreme that most women wouldn't do. I forget her name. Jolie. Yeah.
Now Angelina Jolie. Yeah.
Right. And she. You know, that's kind of an extreme thing, but she realized the susceptibility of it and how it can just start as really small and they not find it. And if it gets a hold in your body, it can take you and you can go in and get chemo treatment for it and be in remission. But sooner or later, years down the road, it's going to come back. I mean, some doctors say you really never are cured of cancer. Because there's just that one cell in your body that they didn't get, and it could come back. And I hope he's wrong from that. But
well, my wife has an aunt who did get breast cancer, and back she was 64 years old when she was first diagnosed, and she went through the chemo, and she had a mastectomy and all that. She is now 103, and she's been clean ever since then. So there's one of those exceptions.
103?
Yeah, 103. And she lives by herself, and she's doing great and all that. So there's hope.
Wow.
Like I say, she was 64 when it hit her, and 103
well,
now.
Well, she's a survivor
so
then.
She is a survivor without question. Yes. So, you know, there's another point, too. I mean, if you know, you've got the faith in the she's a strong woman, and so you got the faith, and you can beat it, I think. And she did. She's one of those examples there where she actually has beat it and doing well. So, it's hope for everybody out there on that. Oak or stainless steel? What is your
my fermentation?
Yes.
Or aging?
Yes.
Well, I ferment in stainless steel, and I have aged in oak barrels, but my primarily I do all stainless steel, unless it's a special wine. To tell you the truth, with the alternative oaking methods, with fruit wine, you really don't oak a fruit wine. But with my Chamberson, which I'm getting, Galen's Red, will be released October the 12th with a release party here coming up pretty quick. And I fermented that in alternative oak. I first started with a French oak.
Mm-hmm.
To give it a little bit smoother finish. And I just didn't like what I was getting off of it after about 14 months of aging.
Wow.
And I, And I switched to American oak and aged it about another 3 months on American oak. And I like it. I like what I've got now. And it's in the bottle. We are going to release it, like I said, the 12th. And we hope people – it is a dry wine. And
what's the grape?
Pardon?
What is the grape?
Chamberson. It's the Chamberson that we got off our vineyard last year.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And it's just not it's not like a bold Norton. It's more subtle. Some people can't take the boldness of a Norton. So we decided to do a little bit more subtle red wine, Missouri wine, and that's why I went with the French oak aging. But the French oak was still too subtle for me, and I added a little American oak. And I do that with oak chips in stainless steel. And eventually we will do a barrel program, but I don't know if you know, you're associated with a winery, I believe, in Florida.
Yeah, Florida Estates Winery, yes.
Well, do you have a barrel program?
No.
Well, as you know, barrel programs are expensive.
Yes.
Especially for a small winery. Not only
That's
is the cost of the
it.
Barrels expensive, but the maintenance of the barrels are expensive. The cleanup of the barrels. Good barrel cleaner is thousands of dollars.
Yes.
Now, where are you going to store those barrels? In a cellar? We've even looked at putting a cellar in. Thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars. To do a barrel program and to do it correctly and to do it right is expensive.
Very, yes.
You know that, and I realize this being a rookie, and I just told Linda, I said, look, you know, I just believe at this point in our business plan that we're just going to use alternative oak. And you know what? It produces a pretty damn good product.
Oh, it works. Yeah, that's
it
the little
work.
Oak that I do. I use alternative. I don't have barrels are expensive. Without question, they're very expensive. And there's so many other ways to do oak with chips and dust and logs
staves.
And bags and staves and I mean. You know, to go into the expense. And I tell people, you know, they say, are you oak? And I said, a little bit, but no. And they say, you have no barrels. And I go, I can buy barrels, but it's going to cost you. And they look
That's
at
right.
me and I said, I got to pass it on. So, you know.
Right.
And so.
And we're bound by that price point, as you are. And you get into, I mean, like, I don't produce a $25 wine. If I did, it would probably be because I'm using barrels. If you want that level of wine, you're going to pay for it, and there's a reason for that. Now, I feel I have the Ford mentality. I believe that you should produce a product that's reasonably priced, and you'll sell a million of them.
Right. So
I don't believe in producing a $40 wine and selling just a couple of barrels of it and being happy with it. I don't come from that school.
And a lot of people aren't more power to them. Solly's white wine. Where did the name Solly's come from?
My wife, she's got German heritage. Sullinger is her maiden name. Solly's is a semi-dry blend, and it is kind of like a Riesling. And so I had to name it something that was on her side of the family, you know. I had to please the wife, so.
Yeah, always.
And people like it, you know. It's a good wine. It's a blend of Vignol and Traminette and a little bit of, I think it's about 10% Traminette and 90% Vigneault.
Uh-huh. How about Totalope?
Totalope.
Where's that name?
Totalope is came from a local name here that all the local residents in Smithville knew, or most of them did. The younger people don't. When we moved here 30 years ago, we were outsiders, and the town was only 1,500 people. And now I think it's like 8,000 or 9,000 people here now.
Yeah. Yeah, it's big.
And
yeah.
Yeah, we were outsiders. Now we're insiders. You know, everybody knows us. But the young people that have came in probably don't know the small town's history. And because this town flooded so much, we went back through history, through the history books of Smithville. And I actually belong to the Historical Society of Smithville. And we found out that back in the days when the town flooded quite frequently, that when the floods came, the people would cross over whatever way they could to get to higher ground. And the north side of the town from the river was known as Totolope. And the people that lived there were called Totolopers. And we just thought it was a catchy name. And we originally, in our name search, thought about naming the winery Totolope Winery. And it kind of had a ring to it. It rolled off the tongue pretty good. But I didn't want people, you know, like having a logo like a toad, and, you know, so we didn't go that way. You know. So we called it Totolope. Yankee Smith was a wine that we produced early the first year that we were open. And the settler of Smithville was Mr. Smith, and
right.
He was known as Yankee Smith. And he was persecuted for his beliefs back in the 1800s. He was for women's rights. He was against slavery. He was beat up and railroaded out of town and is buried in a very discreet graveyard out in the country from here because they didn't want his grave desecrated. But when you look back at what he stood for back many years ago, he was ahead of his time. And everything that he believed in is mainstream now, but was very looked down upon back then. And this is in the history books in Smithville and whatever, if you search his name. But Yankee Smith was ahead of his time, and I felt like that he deserved a little bit of recognition, so we named our first wine Yankee Smith after him.
Well, very good. That's a good story, too. Government, you mentioned it earlier when you were explaining stuff. Federal and state government, you love them, hate them, want to hug them, want to kill them. What's your opinion?
Well, they make me do what I'm supposed. You know, I would say that you know, a lot of what's going on right now, they're trying to switch the TTB over to the Food and Drug Administration.
Oh, I know.
And quite frankly, pardon?
I know. I've heard that, and you know, there's so many pros
coming. I think it's coming. I don't think we have a choice. Whoever makes the decision makes the decision, it's going to come whether we like it or not.
All right.
But I believe that the system we have now is not perfect, but it's not so bad. I've talked with our local people here. It's been a big learning curve for me, all the regulations that you have to follow. But there's a reason why those regulations are in place, because it's hard for the law-abiding winemaker or citizen to you think, why do I got to do this? Why do I have to fill out this form? Well, it's because that there's a lot of seedy characters out there, and because of the moonshine days and prohibition and all that there's always people trying to circumvent the laws and to not pay their fair share. And these forms that we fill out are for tracking so that they have a handle of what's supposed to be. And I have no problem paying the tax on the liquor because I pass it on. And
yeah, we all do.
You know, and I I have no problem with the TTB or the Missouri. I ship also. I have all the licenses that the big wineries have. I have the manufacturing license. I have the wholesale license. I have all those licenses. I don't use the wholesale license, but I didn't want to be handcuffed when I went into this business. I want to be able to do what the big boys do.
Well, so the government really is not – well, you know, and that's basically
– I'm not complaining about it.
It doesn't impend. It's a necessary evil, if anything. I mean, that's really what it boils down to.
I don't even call it an evil, really. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, you have to have a driver's license when you drive a car. There's a reason for that. It's so you know that you're capable of driving a car and not killing somebody that's coming at you from the other direction with a closing speed of 120 miles an hour. So there's a reason for that. But the reason that you – I mean, I do think that some of the people that make wine out there, there's really no criteria for qualification of how good of a winemaker you are.
No.
You can make wine that can make people sick.
Yes. Yeah, there's no standards or anything.
No.
In the business, I mean – you know, you can.
Yeah. Ron, you know as well as I do, you've been to wineries that you've drank wine and you wish you could spit it out in front of them, but you didn't want to embarrass them.
Yes, yeah. Yeah, that's happened.
I've drank some pretty bad wine out there that people are actually selling. I think to myself, they actually put this in a bottle and want to sell it to somebody? They put their name on this?
And people buy it, though. See, you got to, you know, people actually do buy it.
Well, you get it out in the stores, and you figure that you get a sucker every day. Eventually, you'll get it sold.
Get it sold out. You're right. I have another question, Galen. Galen, that's an unusual name. How'd that come about?
I have a story for everything. And this is the truth, but it is a unique name. I was absolutely blown away about 5 years ago. But Galen Haddock is actually pretty rare too.
Yes,
it's not
yeah.
your run of the mill. I mean, it's a fish. It's got its histories, but Galen. I asked my mom one time, I said, Mom, why did you name me that name? I mean, my first name's William, and, you know, I've had people that didn't know me call me Bill, but I've always gone by Galen. And I asked my mother, I said, Mom, how come you to name me that name? And she said, well, when I was a little girl in Preston, Missouri, down by the Lake of the Ozarks, her maiden name's McCain, I'm Irish, she said, I was a little girl. There was a guy on the radio station named Galen Drake, and he broadcast, I don't know, once a week, every night or whatever, and she would sit around the radio station like a lot of people did back then before TV, and they would listen to that, and that was their entertainment. After they'd got done with the fields and their chores and all, they would come in and listen to the radio. And his name was Galen Drake, and she said that once when she had a child that she was going to name him Galen, and she did. And that's kind of the short story from that. And to make a long story out of it, about 5 years ago I got a check in the mail for I don't know $100 or something like that from a car dealer local from me about maybe 10 or 20 miles away. And so I called the car dealer up and I said, you know, you guys sent me a check for such and such money. And I said, why? And they said, well, Galen, when you bought that car, we had to reimburse you such and such for, I don't know, fees that he didn't own. And I said, well, I didn't buy a car from you. And they said, well, just a minute. Let me get the salesman on the line. And the salesman come on and says, hi, Galen. He says, this is Galen Haddock. And I said, yeah, it's Galen Haddock. And he says, well, you get that money because you such and such. And I said, well, I didn't buy a car from you. He says, yeah, you did. I said, no, I didn't. He says, well, you live in Gallatin, Missouri, don't you? And I said, no, I live in Smithville. He said, what? So I calls up
Gallatin.
I look on it, and he, sure enough, there's a guy. It gets stranger. This is kind of like your ghost wineries that you're going to talk about. And I call this guy up, and he's Galen gets on the phone, and I said, Galen Haddock? And he goes, yeah. And I said, I can't believe it. He goes, yeah. And I, and so we got to talking. He's a, 1 year from being the same age as me.
Really?
He has a son, first son. His son's name's Bryant. My son's name Bryant. I ask him, how did you get the name Galen? And he starts talking about his mother
listening to the radio
and when she was a child. And I swear on my dad's grave, this is the truth. I said, you have got to be kidding me. He said, no. And I said, you're not going to believe this, but that's the exact same story that my mother told me. Now, is that a coincidence or what?
That is odd. That is very odd.
That is very odd. And he has since came over and we met each other. He's a very nice guy like I am. Oh, and so that's the story behind Galen.
That is strange. That really is.
Yeah.
Weird. Gotta love that story. Gotta love it.
Yeah.
Mike, is there anything you'd like to ask Galen?
That was good. Yeah, can you tell me, tell us a little bit about the passport program that you're participating in?
I was just reading
about that on your website. And
That's such a good program that Missouri put. I'll tell you, if your government does anything right, that was one program that they really got right. They started this program back a couple of years ago where to help the wine industry in Missouri, they sent out to all the registered wineries a little passport. It's a little book that's like got different pages in it, and you had this stamp that when they came in, you stamped that page, and when they got so many wineries stamped in there, and each level got a different prize. It was kind of a game for them, and some really had to travel many miles to get upwards of over 100 wine stamps, winery stamps in there, and they got a very nice prize at the end. I think it was a dinner for so many people at a restaurant of their choice. Some of the levels below that were different things that they sent them, and people really responded to it. And we would get people that lived hundreds of miles from us that would have never came to our winery unless they were trying to get that stamp. And, you know, they tried our wines, and some bought, some didn't. But you know what? It was getting people in the door, and it was getting wine in their mouth, which is the most important thing. And it worked. And I applaud Missouri for doing that passport program. It was a very positive thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah, very interesting. Yeah, I thought maybe it was something that the wineries got together and did, because we talk about wine trails and you know things like that.
Yes.
And some of the wineries we've talked to, they say, we give them a book or we give them something that they take around.
Yes.
and they get something for that, but not anything that I don't think we've talked to anybody who has a state based or maybe we have. It's been
New
a
Jersey.
While, but,
they did
New
it.
Jersey.
They did it
okay.
Here in Missouri. Now, yeah. We do special things. Some wineries around here, you mentioned wine trails. When mm-hmm. we first came in, opened 2 years ago, I was the new kid on the block. And I called all the local wineries around me that were relatively close. And I asked them if they wouldn't mind coming over and meeting us and talking about creating a wine trail. And I said, I'll feed you. And they said, yeah, we'll come. So they all showed up, and through the cooperation of University of Missouri and some of the people, our local extension agent, I convinced them that we should join together and create the Great Northwest Missouri Wine Trail. We did that. We have a website. We have a map on there. We've made brochures, And it every one of the wineries now that are on that wine trail are all in the expansion phase now. It's been a very positive thing for us to create the Great Northwest Wine Trail. You know, Northwest Missouri has been kind of a sleepy area for wineries, and there are more of them coming in all the time. It's been a good thing for us, and wine trails with a incentive to create their own, like some, you know, you're right, the wine trails will have their own little stamp, and by the time they get to the last winery, they get a little prize or they get something. There's different ways to market that, and it's a great marketing idea.
That's that state thing, though. I didn't know Missouri was doing that. That's something that it's recently new, isn't it?
Well, it's like 2 or 3 years old, and people really responded to it. I think that if any state did it, if anyone was listening, they would be crazy not to do it because it works. The people just like doing it, and they are able to see the countryside areas that they normally wouldn't. And there are people that like wine. Let's face it; it's not somebody that doesn't have anything to do. It's something that it gives them incentive to go to that winery that they necessarily wouldn't make that trip to go to because they want to get that stamp. And there are some little rules that you have to follow. You can't they're not inhibitive, though. It's a good program. It's a proactive program.
So for the state, plus beyond the touring different parts of the state like that, they're also putting money into the economy in that state too, because they're going to buy something along the way.
Well, I think I've read somewhere where a person that comes into the community to the winery, for every dollar they spend at the winery, they spend $5 in that community, getting gas, eating, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just a win-win situation for everyone.
Right.
And the city of Smithville has recognized that we are a destination site, and they changed the local signage that gets to our winery instead of going through the roads to get here. They now direct them down through downtown Smithville and to get through there because they know that the traffic is there. And you can look at our guest book and people come from Iowa, Nebraska, Kansas, everywhere, and those people wouldn't have come to this community and spent their money if they didn't have the wine trail, if they didn't have some reason to come here. And it's just, we're not a bar. We're not, it's a different kind of attitude. We've got chimes hanging from the trees. It's relaxed. Sunsets are beautiful here. And we love the laid-back people that enjoy themselves here by the fireside. We have a fire pit outside. We built 2 gazebos this year. And it's a very relaxing place to be.
Yeah,
sounds fantastic.
They're good. Yeah, definitely.
Elmer, the elm tree.
What?
Pardon?
Elmer, the elm tree.
The elm tree. Oh, okay. Elmer is a great big elm tree that, a lot of the Chinese elm that are around here grow maybe 15, 20 years and then they die. And when the bark slips off of the elm tree, you'll find morel mushrooms around them in the spring. That's about the only thing I can say good about an elm tree. But right close to the winery is a very huge elm tree. And it was very stately for many years. We've lived here 20 years. It gave a lot of shade. But it's starting to decline now, and I've had to keep pruning it back. And I'm going to estimate that it's only going to last a couple more years. But it's quite a large elm tree. And the guy that owned this property prior to us buying it, his name was Elmer Smith. And I don't think he had anything to do with Smithville or any of that. There's a lot of Smiths. And we decided to name the tree Elmer, and there's been a lot of deer cleaned underneath it. There has been horses hitched up beside it. The old road that came through here went by it, and I'm sure there's been an Indian in a two that's leaned up against it on a hot summer day in the 1600s, 1700s. It's just a big stately tree, and it's probably seen a lot of history that we'll never know about. And so we just named it Elmer.
Well, it gets top billing in your photo section. That's why I was wondering about Elmer. So.
That's all my wife. I know.
Yeah, I have one too. Elmer, she can hear me.
Yeah. My wife's always, like we said on our website, trees are your best antiques, you know.
Yes. Mike, anything else you'd like to ask Galen?
No, I think I'm good. Did we talk about are you in an AVA?
No, I'm not, but it's funny you said that. I contacted the government that handles that, and as you know, you might not know, but the first AVA in existence was right here in Missouri. Augusta,
yes, it was.
AVA,
yes.
Was the very first. And then California said, wait a minute, you can't do that to us. And they started their AVAs out there, and there's a million of them out there.
Yes.
Well, right. We are in a unique area here in northwest Missouri, and I've done my research over the winter on the criteria for AVAs, which you may probably know. And there's got to be uniqueness by it. And I called a very pleasant lady that handles that in Washington, which may be laid off right now. And she said that when you get ready to do it, she would be glad to help me navigate through the system in order to create an ABA. That is my next project. As you might expect, that you may have learned from my type A personality, I'm pretty passionate about anything I do. And I felt like it would be a very good complement to this northwest area that's been kind of overlooked by a lot of people out there, that we're just as good as everybody else. And we have a uniqueness here just as much as anywhere else. So my next project will be to create an ABA in the northwest Missouri area.
Northwest Missouri AVA then, or Ladoga AVA, or what are you looking?
Oh, no. I don't think that just because I created it that I should put the spotlight on me.
No, it's the soil. It's the soil.
Yes. The Ladoga would be, but talking with the lady in Washington, that it should reflect, the name should reflect something that the area people know, something that's well known. So I was leaning more towards the Platte River. We have a large drainage area of the Platte area.
Right.
You know, you got North Platte, which is in Nebraska too, and that is a well-known area that would recognize that area. Like, you know, some of the ABAs in Missouri are the Ozark Highlands area. Well, Ozarks is a region which is readily known. So you got to stay with that kind of criteria. Ladoga is a rare soil, so it's not everywhere. It is in the northwest area. But I think that focus on us would be too much, and I don't really need that focus. I believe that something that's more generally recognized would be better. And so I haven't chosen a name yet, but we're still thinking about it. And we're leaning towards, there's a lot of history up here, like the Pony Express out of St. Joe, Missouri.
Right.
But you can't name it the Pony Express AVA. But
no.
We're looking at the area history to try to find a really good name that apply to everything. I had listened to some of your archive stuff in the back of some of your previous programs, and I particularly enjoyed the barefoot people out there, and about how they brought their name about and all that, and I enjoyed that. That was a good program, and I think that was a good story how they got that.
Yeah, and, you know, an AVA, another AVA in Northwest Missouri there is something that's probably really well overdue since there are so many wineries in that area now, and it is such a unique growing area.
Well, they're popping up around here like mushrooms. I mean, they're just...
Are they? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just, I don't know what it, I guess it's whatever the baby boomers want, they get, you know, the baby boomers got the SUVs, you know, I mean, all the way through, you know, there was such a large population of baby boomers that whatever they wanted, that's what they got. And now the baby boomers are getting up to where the doctors are saying, you know, they're up in their late 50s, early 60s and mid 60s. That the doctors now are saying you can't drink beer anymore. You know, it's too hard on you. But you can have a glass of wine a day. So.
And there it is. Well, I'm going to have to, next trip back there. And I am in Kansas City periodically visiting my family. So I will definitely come out and
we would be honored to have you here.
I would definitely look forward to it. It's something that sounds like it's going to be a great visit and a great trip. And I would look forward to visiting and sitting down with you and trying your wines and talking off the record.
Well, absolutely. You know, when you get with a winemaker, a fellow winemaker, that's when you really learned all the little secrets. And I've got some little secrets for you that'll just blow you away.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to have to make a trip now. well, Galen, give us all the information for Ladoga. Ladoga?
Ladoga.
Dog as in Ladoga?
The way we saw the name, that was how it was pronounced, is Ladoga. Long O.
Ladoga. Okay. Give us all the information for Ladoga Ridge Winery, the address and the phone numbers and the emails and the websites and the Twitter and the Facebook and Instagram, everything. So
you know, I don't even know how to Twitter. I'm not Twittered yet. I mean, I have an account, but I don't know what to do with it. I guess I'm telling my age. I don't quite see the logic in Twittering. Twittering is like what, one sentence that you do and people follow you.
Oh, Mike is big on Twittering. He Twitters this show all the time. We're talking. Yeah.
140 characters maximum. You have to sum everything up in 140 characters. So,
well, as windy as I am, I don't think Twitter will do me any good.
Yeah.
Multiple lines. There you go.
Ladoga Ridge Winery is located at 100 East Pope Lane, Smithville, Missouri, 64089. Our website is ladogaridgewinery.com. Our Facebook is Ladoga Ridge. You can Google search us. It'll pop you up. You can Google map us, and it'll take you right to my front door. Huh. But we have a tall 8-foot gate that closes at closing. But when we have an event, we leave it open until people leave. We don't rush people out. We let them stay. Sometimes we just... tell them to leave the gate open when they leave. We don't babysit people. Let's see what else.
Open year-round?
Yes, we are. We're open year-round. We do have winter hours. We do get snow here. You know what snow is, don't you?
I know what snow is, yeah. Like I said, I was born and raised there in Missouri.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's right. You were from North Kansas City. Yeah.
Yeah. Mike might not. Mike, is that white stuff that you see in
Mike,
pictures?
Mike, snow is this stuff that falls from the sky. It's white.
Well, Mike was in Colorado a couple of weeks ago. Yes. He might have seen it on the mountaintops there. So.
Yeah, that was ugly out there a couple of weeks ago. Anyway, Ladoga Winery. Winter hours are Thursday through Sunday. We add an extra day off. We're closed on Monday and Tuesday. We have Fireside Fridays on Friday. We're open till 8 that evening. And Saturdays, we're open until 8 until, I believe, the last week in October. Then we go to winter hours in November because it gets pretty cold. And we may have a nice, balmy weekend in November, but not very often. it gets pretty cold. January and February, pretty ugly around here. A lot of gray. Everything's cold. But people get cabin fever in the middle of the winter, and they want to come out, so the weekends are pretty busy. So,
Yeah.
Well, all right. Very good.
Thank you for your time. I really appreciate you taking the time to join us this evening, and I will look forward to meeting you. I will, too. I always tell this to wineries if we're ever there. I am there. And so,
well, you
I
have
will,
a reason to come here. I mean, your family's here.
My family's here.
Believe
so I have
me,
a reason, so.
Believe me, I'll make it worth your while.
Well, I'm getting even more excited now.
Well, you haven't tasted my ribs yet.
Oh. Let's see, October.
You know,
what have I got doing in October here? So, very good. Thank you again for your time you spent with us tonight. I will look forward to meeting you, and best of luck with the ventures of the winery in Ladoga Ridge and everything else that you're pursuing there.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, Mike and Ron, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll talk to you.
Mike.
Bye now.
Ah, very cool.
Very nice. Nice stories there. Another Galen Haddock. Can you imagine?
How does that happen?
I don't know. That's odd.
Yep.
Yeah.
We
good
have,
interview.
Yeah, very cool. Very cool. And I have been using Twitter quite a bit tonight and posting some information, taking a lot of notes again. So,
Yeah. So, tell about the event. We've only got like
jump
4 minutes for you.
Yeah, less than 4 minutes. Let's see if this works. Oh, that's barely on, isn't it? There we go. We'll try that. Coming up this Saturday, October the 5th, it's the Pasco Pet Fest, 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. There's going to be entertainment, vendors, a long list of vendors. Let's see, who else? Animal Rescue is going to be there. It's going to be huge. There's going to be musicians. You have... quite a few, actually, there. I don't know how they're going to fit in all in there at in the amount of time, but that's cool. You also have the Florida Ghostbusters, along with the Suncoast Ghostbusters, will be out in full force for Pasco Pet Fest. You're going to have quite a few, Avon, Arbonne, Barking Dog Creations, Bee Dazzling Creations. I don't know if I can get to all these in this amount of time. Who else? Let's see. This will be a pet-friendly event, of course. It's a pet fest, so come down and enjoy it. You have one of your artists is Jennifer Johnson, a rising country singer, will be performing at Pasco Pet Fest. That is this Saturday, October 5th, from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m., Florida Estates Winery. What else? I'm trying to get all this other stuff in here. Tropical Ice, Two Dogs in a Kitchen, LLC, Two Girls and a Beagle will be there. Feather to Feather, Florida Boxer Rescue, Florida Shar Pei Rescue, Florida Skunk Rescue, Husky Haven of Florida, Jeremiah's Foundation, Pasco County Animal Services, Adoption Partners, Pitbull Happenings Rescue, Placing Misplaced Pets, Pug Rescue of Florida, Raffle Rescue, and Siberian Husky Rescue of Florida. Wow. I know I missed somebody.
Yes.
I missed a bunch of... the vendors out there, there's going to be tons of vendors. What else? Blah, blah, blah. It's time for Pitbull having his, dog food cakes, Pet Family Festival to Pasco County. It is this Saturday, October 5th, and I lost my place. It's, gosh.
You've got a minute and a half anyway, so...
Stop by Florida Estates Winery, 25241 State Road 52, 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, and definitely be there this Saturday. It's going to be a great day, 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. for Pasco Pet Fest, and you definitely enjoy it. There's a lot of shopping, a lot of good causes out there, so check it out. Be there. Okay.
Be there.
Yes, and if I'm still on, you can call for more information, 813-996-2113. That's 813-996-2113. I have to close this website out. And
Don't forget to join us next Thursday, which will be October the 10th. For another edition of All About Wine. We'll talk about that a little bit. Well, you'll see it come up on the Facebook page. Follow us on Facebook. It's facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And that's where all the current information is on what's coming up on the show, and then it's posted here on Blog Talk Radio. So what else? 10 seconds. Thank you very much.
Thank
you all
for listening.
Special guest, Galen of Ladoga Ridge Winery. Appreciate it. It was a lot of fun, and we'll see you all next Thursday. Thanks for tuning in.
Yes. Very good. And we're almost done. Thanks to all for listening tonight. See you next week.
Yes. Oh, recording is on. Okay. Yeah, we'll see you all next time. Here we go.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.